Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Scientists thinking about Christianity of all things, and this is one of the, I suppose, hot button topics. You get a scientist talking about Christianity, you expect them to come up with a series of counter... evangelistic ideas or proselytizing, counter-proselytization, which, you know, people are sort of sensitized one way and then they hear the scientists fight back as sort of like a melee. And unfortunately, you're not going to get that from me, because as a scientist, you sort of look at things and you try and apply various methods, sometimes the scientific method, different types of methods. You look at it and you see where you get things. Now, what sort of stimulated me to do this is that I went with my mother-in-law, who's a devout... I don't think you call it a devout Christian. I don't think it's devout. It's empowered. I've been to various Christian... experiences together and empowered. And when I say empowered, I think there's a fundamental empowerment that a lot of people get from any organisation or any group and or any system where my ignorance is as good as your knowledge. So democracy tends to go out and say, look, here we get six ignorant people in the room, four intelligent people in the room. Let's have a vote. Oh, we'll go with the ignorant viewpoint. That's in democracy. But in a whole other series of situations, when you look at it, things coming out of there, you don't have to be logical. You don't have to. It's sort of like an excuse. So. People would know that, say if they have bosses or anything like that, balance of power is not on the actual knowledge of what to do. Yeah. It's not on the, so I'm just walking up to my gym at the moment on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, and my family bought me some as my Christmas present, two $8 t-shirts and $8 pants, which are officially something called activewear. Now, sort of the talons of fashion get into every aspect of it, and again, fashion and gossip is a license for people to be collectively ignorant. So I've sort of sensitized to this, that a lot of the people I saw there weren't concerned about facts or about being right or about whether their viewpoint would stack up scientifically. That they knew that already. And it didn't worry me, but it was just an interesting observation that they were finding a environment which supported their ignorance. So my granny and a few people I know are climate—I call it granny, mother-in-law—are climate change deniers, and they're very happy to just state an argument and to put their hands over their ears or just smile and just completely laugh at you. Sort of smile and laugh at you as they just say, oh, I'm believing what I want to. It's my right in this situation. They sort of become acclimatized to being able to cast their vote illogically, and perhaps this Christian gathering was along those lines, but I'm not against it. I found that in general, en masse, they were very nice and polite and thinking and listening, but they were definitely wanting to give you their message. They were listening to a point, waiting for you basically at any point to stop speaking and say, any chance of joining us. It's a mechanism. So as a logical situation, where I would win my argument with, I suppose, scientific measurements, statistics, this idea of the feel, the vibe, and it was very much in there. But it was interesting that a lot of groups get an en masse license to be ignorant. Now, en masse, it's good because they sort of hold each other back. But there are a few people in there who are, there's this saying from Carl Sagan that there's a toxic, highly combustible combination of ignorance and power, and if you allow ignorance to sort of circulate within yourself and unchecked, you can come up with any conclusion you want and exert an ignorance power. And I sort of find this sort of interesting. How does this fit in evolutionarily? Now, we go back, in my view, that obviously this is a social gathering, and you look at social animals like, chihuahuas, like chimpanzees. I'm very conscious that the base of this microphone is rattling a bit, so I'll see what I can do about that one. I put it up with a bit of gaffer tape. Yeah, so you've got a group, and the essential thing is that you have to tone down individual thought, amplify thought, and have a sort of internal group mind. And in your mind, there's always positive stimulus and taking the stimulus, error correction. So it's forward, back, control of those to get to where you want to adapt, to get excess activity happening in your brain. That's a sort of general thing of an organism. So it's like the organism's a kind of group organism, and it has to switch off the brain of majority of people, include the brain of the top people, and overlaid on this, you've got the group having a consciousness and a program, and you have people buying into the group because they believe their personal benefit is bigger than that. And with this, you always have the idea of cheating, where you take more, you are given so much resources to mine for the group, and you don't return to the group the value they've invested in you. Sort of cheating. And so the group will develop a hierarchy, rules of punishment. If you don't do the right thing by the group will turn around and punish you. And so this idea of cheating, and the idea of cheating being able to operate without complete information, or hidden information, I think might be the story. So often, to work efficiently, you have to be entrusted with information, basically having trust of the group given into you to operate effectively. So if every task has to be overseen and checked, you can't operate. Now, or coming into a different regime. We've just gone up the top of a little hill, and I'm on this rehab thing, and I'm just out of the whole operation. I couldn't have done it, so that's a good plus. After Christmas, I've just put on, I think in 2 days, I've put on probably three kilos, so I've got to nab that. I'm aware that I've just got to keep on pushing my breathing. So sorry for breathing there, but just getting back to the group, you have the idea that you want them to operate with a fear of supervision, and in essence, this sort of fear landscape comes into the idea of domesticated animals, and we have self-domesticated ourselves, and part of self-domestication is that with a wild animal, the moment you walk away, it runs away. With a domestic animal, if you walk away, it will stay with you, and it has programs in its mind that you're going to come back and feed it, essentially is there. So it's there most of the time, but you're not there all the time. So you can own a dog and you can come there for an hour a day and can pick up where it's gone. And similarly with humans are self-domesticated, and with, I think, self-domestication is the idea of cruelty. So one of the things is that part of the domestication scene is that the animal itself is not of a intellectual level to understand why it's been trained. It's only just gets trained. And at a certain point, there's things where you say, say if a dog shits in your house, it's not cruel to grab it by the scruff and rub its nose in its poo. Because we've said that that's not cruel. But in fact, in terms of looking from the dog's perspective, that is cruel. Now, the dog obviously can't understand the whole story of what's going on. So a certain element of cruelty is useful social conditioning. So I think this is interesting because the entire center of Christianity is the cross, the ultimate act of cruelty, and trying to work out how this cruelty works into the process. And to boot, you've got a system of licensed ignorance, and the idea is that look, heck, if I put a Christian, an individual by themselves, that's the price we pay. That's the price we pay, that they're ignorant going forward, and that's okay. They can be ignorant and actually trade their ignorance off for its knowledge. They're actually probably doing a good service by actually knocking down knowledge. So it's sort of like this the individuals going out there are okay. Now, I suppose I don't see this as a planned thing. I think this is a natural thing. Perhaps we could wind some of this back. So let me put this again. Part of a group is to actually move, concentrate intelligence with action and power, and then push out ignorance into other aspects. And there is a certain aspect to cruelty, which is behavioural training without understanding. That's effectively, like it, we say that if you, many years ago, it was okay to whip a horse to get it to run faster. That's okay. The horse didn't understand what it's whipping, it's just some sort of pain and stuff like that. But now we say that's cruelty. But effectively, it's the same. It's the same thing. So this is a when you've got a you have to communicate behaviour without sophisticated understanding. This is where you trust the intellect of everybody. This is perhaps a new thing of the digital age, I think. There is this tendency to get things done with cruelty, and the sanctioned cruelty for a good bringing people up and stuff like that. And I think we are changing it. There's cruelty which is out of context, and we say identify that, and we start to use group thing, because I think cruelty is a very valuable commodity and we're wasting it. Now, if someone in this, I'm not saying that Christians at all are cruel, they're highly sensitized to cruelty, they're actually addressing a fundamental aspect of what's going on. Now, but the individuals themselves can be exceptionally cruel, a combination of cruelty and empowered ignorance. That is, my ignorance beats your knowledge, get fucked, basically. So you get that combination. That's an individual, you don't get that on group. And to a certain sense, because it's so focused on group cohesion, anything out, if you use the machinery privately for your own means, well, there's sort of an economy of logic then. Now, this is not to say, like a lot of the more intellectual Christian people I met were aware of that, and I don't expect them to be cruel, but the combination of ignorance and cruelty and power control, they just do the same thing. And no one has ever expected them to act logically, and bit by bit they've sort of got away. It's sort of like a bad dog, so to speak, a misbehaving dog. And you can send them to puppy school, but all you've done, you haven't got a better trained dog as far as I can see. You've only got a dog who's been to puppy school. You know, they're not. I suppose we attribute it to it. Now, the interesting thing is mixing of ideas with a personality. And essentially, the creation of self is in a group. The sort of passport to being a member of a group is to understand your own self-identity. And it's sort of a contract, group contract, personal contract. You'll tend to behave with your what's called your personality, your sense of self. And people can pick up a record of your sense of self, get up your CV. Half your CV is what you physically can get in grades, how fast you can run. The other half is a statement of self. Now, so self, which you sell yourself, is a literacy, and essentially I'm not saying this has got no relevance to whether God is real or not or that level, but the creation of a God is the creation of a meta-self, something, a default personality. So they didn't have books, they didn't have theologians to discuss God, but they only had, the only literacy was stories, and stories about self, so the narrative. So people give parables and stories, and so it would only make sense that if you want to teach someone how to behave, you have an exemplar behavior person, because people can read what is it, read. As you read a book, you can read people. And people are written with their personality. And so this is the entire sort of God theory, that you have this self mechanism is actually a self-literacy. When I say self-personality literacy, so we create a God personality. So we know very few facts about God. In fact, there's no evidence for God. However, we talk about the God personality and the virtue of that God personality. And so there's actually, like within all logic, logic is correct, but it's sort of written on, like, if I've got a book on mathematics, the book of mathematics contains correct facts, but it in itself is not correct. It's just paper and ink, and my interpretation of it is correct. So in sort of a similar situation, the Christian story appears to be written information written with a personality assessment, and you get this sort of difficulty. So people who you have a book on mathematics, and someone gets the book, rips it up and burns it up, they haven't actually destroyed the mathematics. And this is sort of rather an interesting aspect of it. So if you look at a lot of confusion, sorry for all these trucks going past, it's actually rather light traffic today. I suppose it's the Boxing Day early on. Hopefully my microphone is sort of not picking up all these bloody cars going past. So in essence, although the Bible is written as a book, there's actually another scripture, and which is the actual personality. And this is quite a genius innovation. Now, people may not like that, I'm at the point of not saying whether it's right or wrong. It's just an observation. And part of that personality programming, that logic, is this embracing that you don't have to be smart. And it's almost what you call culture jamming the existing culture, so much so the existing culture has to move on to Christianity and then move across. It's sort of like the classic culture jam. So I don't know, we have a supermarket chain here from Germany called Aldi, and it culture jams the existing products with its own products. So instead of Philadelphia cheese, which is our name for cream cheese, it has Manhattan cheese, for instance. So instead of Just Right, which is a Kellogg's brand, it has Balanced Right. So it's these things which are good, and you have a sort of brand loyalty. Now, again, a brand is not information, it is a pointer or proxy for information. And a brand is like a personality. Yeah. What's in front of me is what's in front of me. Now, the fact is that I compute my language of brands and my language of personalities, my language of religion is written the same. So it's quite an ingenious system, and its aim is to replicate itself. That is, for you to join and then to force other people to join and to be a sufficient quorum that people, you know, people are quorum sensing animals, you'll get across. And so it's not, it's a sort of like a waste product, you know, that some of the products sit on the shelves doing sort of crazy stuff. And this is this, it's like the process of group control is a certain amount of cruelty. Now, sanctioned cruelty we call discipline. And I'm not saying from the outside we see a complete difference between discipline and cruelty, but from the inside, the internal person becomes conditioned by a landscape of fear. So, and it's not a bad thing, it's sort of by getting a three-year-old and really shouting at it and clicking on the head, cross the road, don't cross the road, hold mommy's hand, all this other stuff. They live because the whole society's grown up to create sort of veins of activity, that sort of large mass that can be scaled up. Now, the cruelty is another really interesting aspect, because cruelty and cheating means that you have to put a lot of attention and energy into concentrating what's going on, and that means that it keeps the group honest. Cheat, I mean, it's hard to say, it's strange to say, cheating keeps the group honest and it keeps it efficient. So cheating ultimately is an efficiency game. So you have if you can imagine a group of happy Neanderthals, and I think that's what happened to the Neanderthals. Neanderthals probably didn't know how to cheat, whereas the cheating people became intensely social. So to cheat, good cheats have a slightly larger, hopefully larger brain, the ability to con, and essentially, obviously, the Queen of England. If you look at the DNA, if I had a series of vials, DNA vials, intelligence tests, the whole lot of stuff, and I've said, identify the Queen, you know, a double blind test, something like that, where, you know, no one, the experimenter doesn't know what they're doing, identify who the Queen is, they wouldn't get it. So the result is that if you can see a bias, there is this natural bias, this self bias, and then this conspired bias of an individual or group. And so essentially the Queen, the idea of royalty, is obviously a con. And the thing is that if you want to go against it, you get all these royalists come up, and it seems I can't really tell the difference. Well, in fact, it's strange, pretty strange, that all of these really dyed-in-the-bum anti-climate denier Christians are also royalists, and it's the same sort of almost the same play. My ignorance is equal to your knowledge. Fuck off. Yeah, fundamentally, and they sort of a wry laugh, and it's sort of like giving yourself 10 out of 10, doing a maths test and getting 10 out of 10. How do you do it? You just write 10 out of 10 at the top. It's simple. That's sort of, it's basically a contempt for knowledge. And I really think that comes through. So there is that aspect of it. Now, that being said, the reason I'm not particularly Richard Dawkins, the anti-crusader, the anti-God crusader, that type of stuff, is that the actual, what people think is science, is actually just really being taken over by religious teaching, and we have a religious view of science, and a lot of the many scientific faults in the way that we think are also scientific faults in the way religious people think. So it's not, you can't suddenly say in the room there's 10 people here and the winner is so and so. It's not like that. It's sort of like a job interview, and you say we have to re-advertise for the job of a thinking man because there's no one here who's really up to the level. I think, sorry, man or woman, in person. No one's here, it's up to the job. And so you got that, for me, the interesting aspects of pinning your messages to a personality and sanctioning group ignorance, empowering group ignorance to chomp through any knowledge standing in the way. But there's also sort of theological faults. Now, it's interesting that there's theological roots in science and sort of logical flaws. One of the logical flaws is the simultaneity, which is degree, what I call, what people learn in school is first order Einstein, then the second order Einstein, which you learn in university, general relativity, but the zeroth order Einstein, the fact that no one, the fact which really stuffs up religion in a massive way, but it actually gets you thinking about some really deep aspects of it. So let me talk about the well, it's still been taught into schools now, and it was the idea of Newton, and built on a medieval idea of angelic time, and this is the universal clock, that there is a now, and everything I can see is now, and somehow that breaks down when I look up to the moon. But short distances, but even short distances have this aspect that any distance from your head is in the past. You can only see into the past, and the most up-to-date thing is the fly on your nose. Everything else is progressively a few nanoseconds to tens of nanoseconds to seconds to years, billions of years old. And so if I get a watch and I move it away from me, it redshifts and appears to slow down. And so it's say if I have a watch in my face, I move it onto a shelf a meter away, it gets 3 nanoseconds slower. I then check on that. The way I can check on it, it's like another watch which is up to date in my head. Move it, it will also similarly slow down the same amount. I pick either watch up, bring it to my head, they'll speed up 3 nanoseconds. Now, this is a problem that you have people praying for an event, and there's a whole series of laws of physics which I suppose shut down various aspects of how a miracle can happen. But look, I still think miracles can happen of a sort. I don't know whether it's worth praying for. I think praying has got another social function, but it's not a form function. I think praying is ideal for people who can't really grasp complexity of it. They just want the solution. So it's sort of like looking at an exam paper, giving yourself 10 out of 10 and getting the sanctioned correct solution. It's like cheating on an exam paper. Now I'm coming up here now to Anytime Fitness, so I'll have to switch you off and get going. So it's talking, I'll see what I can remember writing up. But yeah, this is some of the science coming across
is not as bad news as religion, but it's also bad news for school science. Back podcasting again. It's a little bit of a break as I went to the gym for about 2-3 hours. And cognitive training is just blisteringly stupid. Like, the BrainHQ software just doesn't work, doesn't upload. It's hard to say. You're not ever in a zone to be frustrated doing it. But we're talking about the concept of Christianity being sort of a cult associated with subverting cruelty. So it's a cult of, it worships extreme, well, it's hard to say, they note extreme cruelty. This is Christ and cross and all that sort of stuff. And yet, you know, what is cruelty? It is a method by which society gets its dirty work done, gets the job done, gets the kids educated. We are programmed to forget our cruelty as a horse which is broken is programmed to forget, or eventually forgets. You know, just focuses on where its food is coming, becomes domesticated. So there's this background cruelty, and in sort of the focus of getting the community up and running, you get these individuals who can be quite excessively cruel to actually see what's going on. But the general thing I was talking about was the science conflict. So as a scientist, you have a conflict with how science is taught, and deeply embedded in some of the statements. You know, they're not scientifically rigorous, and it begs the question, is the actual teaching sort of quasi-religious? Or is it, as Descartes, René Descartes from the 1640, around that time, is it a parody of reason? Is education like that? So there are these logical problems in both. One is basically, if you get a miracle and write down some equations around it, like entropy, you know, increase of, or conservation of entropy, or the increase of entropy, or the fact that entropy has to increase. So if you actually get, say, or mass, conservation of mass is energy, how does it actually happen? Also causality, and some of the actual understanding of what is simultaneous. So they say this occurred then in terms of space-time. They don't look at the event cone which comes out from things, and the fact that there's a relationship between you and distance and time. So things which are further away from you are further back in time. So two people see each other, they're seeing an image of each other, age. Everything you see is old, as old and aged. If it's a meter away from you, it's 3 nanoseconds old. And so you've got these two objects, and they're not, they are going through time at the same point, but they are forever looking at things into their past. And so this is this thing that Newton really didn't understand, and his unfolding was Figo nullus, something like that. Now, I feign no hypothesis, I just say it is the great glory of God. But essentially, this great glory of God was just skipping space-time. Newton didn't have any space-time, and he had embedded in his ideas an idea of angelic time. That is, time where it's constant everywhere. My second, when I see you, you've got a clock and you walk away from me, that clock doesn't slow down in time. It's angelic time, and the angels can flip from point to point in this universe, and sort of that's
buried you feel in their descriptions of what's going on. Also causality, in terms of I can't, I suppose, cause something to happen greater than the speed of light. One could accommodate that, say, well, that's reasonable. Technically, there's a police random breath testing unit coming up here doing a bit of a UE, probably going to set up somewhere close by. It's, I suppose, to do with entropy and the order of a system and exquisitely fine measurements that we have, very fine instruments, which are not, have no capacity for a prayer component of the wave function. So we have a certain number of electrons coming off a certain photoelectron effect, or I have a certain I have a neutrino detector or a dark matter detector. I'm sure there are people praying for, who pray for detection, but it's almost so. The extent of our measurement is pretty pretty phenomenal. Now there is this area of entanglement, and really that's sort of just another layer into the it's not angel time universe, and it's sort of like the last vestige of hanging on to the medieval concept of time and causality, that I can create an entangled pair and they can communicate instantly across distance. And so if I have an entangled pair, I can do some measurements and that will affect the measurements coming out the other side. But what I can actually measure is the randomness, and I can select to measure the randomness of two components, one or the other, and I can select which variable I measure, and that will affect the other person's measurement, but they will not be able to see the randomness or what's going on. They'll only be able to work out what's going on if they have my set of data, put the data together, and then they can work out what I've done. So I could put a Morse code signal out to them and get that Morse code signal to them in the data, but I can't actually... I have to send them my data. So I could all... may as well send them the Morse code. But there is an interesting thing that things are continually diffracting or coming across. We've got a continuous wave front coming across, and the sort of the idea of a quantum thing measuring a quantum, essentially a detector is a quantum device, as described by quantum mechanics. So it all comes together. You must say that if I reverse time precisely, I should be able to recreate everything. It is pretty astonishing, due to statistical mechanics, how this all uncovers. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't leave much room for miracles or anything in our description. We have actually, rather than explaining huge amounts of complexity in detail, we've explained the overall energy, mass is conserved, entropy must increase, there is this causality, and it's sort of almost like etiquette. Talking about things with this zeroth idea of Einstein, the fact that this space-time and things distance from me are in my past by that distance. I mean, it becomes really obvious when you look a long distance away, short distance away. But it's sort of like you're going up to order a cup of coffee And the waitress says, "What the fuck do you want?" And it's sort of like, yes, they have asked what I want, but it's in the wrong format. And if they don't quite understand what you're talking about, they can't understand. So when you talk to someone, you say, "Oh, that doesn't quite make sense because of these factors." And in this case, it doesn't quite make sense. People all concentrated together to influence the wave functions a long distance away. And the idea that you could chaotically get in and trick all statistical measures of randomness and actually have a favoured random outcome, sort of a non-random random outcome. And there's so much science to understand how that happens. That's not to say that praying is not worthwhile, and praying doesn't have a function of stopping people bitching for that amount of time, stopping people thinking about themselves for a short while of time. And the idea that the interesting thing in praying is the other people are aware that everybody else is praying and having the same set of thoughts. So the idea that thoughts could do and change, and that we're somehow going to avoid a fate of being cooked to death by global warming because God will come in and adjust the carbon dioxide levels, or adjust the heat absorption coefficient of carbon dioxide. I suppose my query would be that if God's going to come in and do that, why wait till seats of the pants to show you that? Why wait till a life and death situation? Why not show it in an experiment, or show it in a computer which doesn't work? The uniformity principle. We're pumping out all this stuff. All our knowledge is based on this uniformity principle. However, that all being said, I think prayer does actually have a function along the lines of a programming function. So initially, the literacy of behavior was personality. So I could make you do something by reason or fear I'd be thumped by a person, a person with a personality, reading it. So our reasoning as an animal is based on that. So there's that programming system. And a long time before the Middle Ages, there was no such thing as silent reading, and even silent thought. Everyone uttered their thoughts aloud, and so you could actually hear what everyone was doing. So it's sort of like if you've ever seen Ricky Gervais' invention of lying. It's a little bit of a world similar to that coming through. I just really hope I can hear this microphone clicking a bit. I hope it's not clicking a dreadful amount coming across. Yeah, so there's that aspect of it, that prayer. I think it has a good effect, but then the prayer in the hands of someone who is running their ignorance in cancellation mode, so that they can use their ignorance, sort of go in and sort of kamikaze with a big block of ignorance just to smother anything. So what they can do is they can say, A, I don't understand. B, the risk, I don't understand. Has it made any money? Really, high speed illogical arguments. And in their hands, that's just prayer. It's probably just a chance for them to catch breath and continue on the way that they are outside. But inside, there seems to be some sort of group programming and acknowledgement of So look, one way to do it is that one could get everyone to study the causes of drought, assess drought plans, modify behaviour and actually do something good, or they can be all panicky and the tension of the drought and that type of stuff can go into them, or they can pray. So I think prayer is an option, an option in there, which actually does some programming. The idea that prayer is to a personality legitimizes that literacy of personality as an object which can program behavior. It's a, for me, a very interesting aspect in terms of I would do something for a measurable outcome. As a small kid, you might do it to please mummy and daddy. That the idea of pleasing someone is just, it's in there. And I think you need sort of almost like a family conference. You know, mum and dad are really upset with you. Let's have a family conference and have a reset. It's coming on here. Let's set this light. I think I'll just quietly whip around the back of here. Waiting for these cars. I don't know if you can hear the exhaust of these cars coming past. I think I do have a not a strong criticism, but we've got to really think of a way of actually flipping these, quieting these people. I think these people would be doing damage, Christianity or not. It's just that Christianity gives them a fabric and a breathing space to do it. So I think we have to go to there. I think we do have to say, at a certain point, you have to look at your knowledge system and say, is my knowledge system stopping me listening to science and points of view? And so that definitely does happen, that people say, oh, what are you studying? Oh, quantum physics. Does everyone understand it? No, look, really no one. In my daily life, I've encountered not one soul who really understands it. Or studying this area of mathematics, who else knows? Well, I've sort of developed it myself, and it's, oh, well, have you made any money out of it? Maybe the second, have you made any money out of quantum physics? In terms of, it's almost like saying, has it been credentialed by an outside source which can alleviate me, myself, and my ignorance of it? And, no. So, does it mean that it's pointless? In their view, it is, and you are technically insane for continuing to think and go through it. And perhaps there is, but it means that you can come in and I suppose differentiate yourself from the reactionary to just the, you know, oh my shit. So there's, if you can imagine a someone with loud rock music, doesn't play for any plumbing or something like that, you know, just no housing upkeep, and they make heaps of sound, make heaps of noise, and it finally goes and ruins the neighbourhood, takes up all the resources, and it's just a complete balls up. You're living in something to, if you're a neighbour, you're very much judgmental. You say, I've tried to stop. So I think the familiarity breeds contempt, but long exposure, there's a sort of long burn trying to react with things. So you tend to build up, inoculate yourself from various things and become very judgmental. Whereas if you're just coming into a neighbourhood and you see something flooding, and you can go in with sort of
you see a house that's not well structured, you can say, well, look, all the other houses in the street have their problems. You've got a problem as well. And let's look at it. And what do you want to achieve in your daily routine? You want to run your life as though there is a big personality organising everything for you, which is okay. I think it's probably as legitimate as any other way to do it. Perhaps I wouldn't try and convince too many people of it. I just not keep it to yourself. As all things, just keep it reasonable. And but by the way, you could turn down the rock music. You can turn down this. There are things that you could do to still achieve what you want to achieve without doing damage to it. So you can get a better view from your house by building another story to look over, rather than going down and cutting out all the neighbours' trees. I don't know. That's somewhat, there's, and you can come in and say that. And so I'm sort of saying that, in that there does appear to be some value in prayer, in thought, in a whole group of people coming in, and it's the I've got a bit of a problem with the end point of a situation, a conclusion, and just bunging that in a prayer, because when you do that, you can bung in a whole heap of other prejudices and things like that. Not that that's what I saw, but there is a possibility. That's really, and it's programming for a consensus of what the big personality is, and the big personality is the Christ, Christian, the God, feeling it. And the central thing is that we were cruel to God. God is not necessarily cruel to us, but it helps us understand the cruelty in our society. Yet one could step back and actually say, perhaps we could actually have some better systems in place to make it more difficult for people to be abjectly cruel, to do a hit and run, an ignorance hit and run, and just come into a situation, declare a few facts that's convenient for them, and year on, you know, 5 years ago, they come in and look at, they gather evidence for their conclusions, rather than make conclusions from the evidence. They've got that poor habit from 5 years ago, and looking at, say, a 10%, not a huge increase, but a 10% increase every year would be a great, fantastic thing. If you could stop ignorant people coming in and running around the place, if you could stop people who have become desensitized to using cruelty because they think it works, they get a feedback system from it that it works. If you had, I think, the combination of cruelty and cheating, put it together, and these are the two things. It's sort of strange. These are the two things which really seems to rile Christians, I think. That is, seeing cruelty to other people, and they correspondingly think so they can express it. With all sort of incompetent, I don't want to say incompetent, but less competent craftsmen, you can get your great stonemason and build the Gothic cathedral, or you can have people with the same material, same tools, and they produce absolute pile of rubble, an intellectual pile of rubble. So it is possible with the Christian thought to actually have fantastic thoughts, and indeed I find it really incredible to read some of the Christian theology. And the way that they can actually finally grapple with this sort of snaking These are the cathedral builders with the Christian content. I think it's Bernard Lonergan who I read recently. And that General Bernard Lonergan's 1952, if you can imagine, from the moon launch, the horn-rimmed glasses, the white shirt, he was sort of like the papal NASA man, but you know, and stuff like that. And he would go deeply into things about a body of knowledge, and can something be incorrect in that body of knowledge? Which is no. We have our definition of science, and it can't have, and in theology, you can't have a contradiction in it. Whereas other people who are less masterful say, that's what it is. Your rocks you build, things have flaws in them. And I build a house, it's not flawed because I say it so, because of the person. It's a fundamental personality argument. It's got the brand mark. It's got the brand. I'm not saying that thinking by brands is bad. It is very efficient, and it's a way that we can meet our onerous duty of care things by using branded products. And so the duty of care is inside the brand. That Bernard Lonergan said that if something is a flaw in your argument overall, and you push it through and say that it applies, you've devalued your logic. The actual quality of the logic that you're using is devalued by having a flaw in it. Or if you have a flaw and you allow it only within the region of a dogma, let's say like climate change or something like that, so you will know not to burn chicken, know not to burn your lunch, whatever it is, but you will burn the planet, and your flaw of logic is confined to within the region of that dogma. It's a roundabout way. I love the way he said it. It's a roundabout way of saying your dogma is false. Isn't that beautiful? So if you've got a statement which you can use properly, but you're choosing not to use it in your dogma, and this is so this beautiful, gentle way. So it's really interesting to me in that the Christian theology actually has some of the formulas that one could go across. Now, we have sort of these major problems here in terms of people seem to be a bit bewildered by things. We have a whole lot of ancient institutions and ancient ways of doing things which are not patently not working. We have a democracy, a government system, and we have this system of cheating, cruelty, and gerrymandering, and everything you can do to actually cheat your way across. That is to devalue knowledge and replace it with convenient ignorance of convenience. And then we have it in the system, the parliamentary system, where these people are not very, very bright. And you have a whole room full of not very bright people, and we're saying, and the play starts now, and we sort of argue, we don't know how the play's going to end because it's ad-libbed, but then that play is law. Now, obviously, if it's producing stupid stuff, and we can actually get sort of the mad playwright in there, and we can turn it around, we can pervert it. I think this is one of the geniuses of humanity. It's the perversion. It's the continual ripping down. So imagine if we never ripped down a building. We'd still have all these ancient buildings up. This ripping down allows us to reinvent, repurpose, recycle, rework. So it's actually very economical. It's just that people can't see the difference between productivity and actually getting in there and working out, directing where the rebuild is. We're basically a parasite on our major thing, and we've become addicted to building and ripping things down and putting things down, and with that going on, all that confusion going on, you've got your ignorant vandal who is there and is armed with their ignorance, ready to go out and do battle with anyone with knowledge and declare themselves victor. You've got the idiot who, well, weren't given a problem right 10 out of 10 out of it, for they're actually contemplating and say, ha, I've done it. And you've got those people and their legion, and there's sort of no way to stop it. However, I do think we are perhaps thinking ways through. It's almost as though we've got the same similar thing going on in terms of a company and a board. Like, there it is, a company is an artificial personality. It is a corporate personality, a corporate persona. So we very much treat companies as people. And it has, under the law, they're liable as people. They have reputations. They have value on the books as people. So this idea of inventing companies as people. Yet companies like people can go mad, and they can basically not move with the times. So it's really rather interesting to me to see people. Surely you wouldn't need to have Vatican I and II and whatever's coming up next, because God said what he said, but we've got to reinvent the persona, the actual give a makeover over to it, so make it fit for purpose. But in a roundabout way, that's saying that there is, well, it's hard not to say that there's no substance to it, but a large fraction of the substance is not optional, but strategically moved. It's sort of like the ingredients and baking a cake, and some new ingredients are coming on, and we're doing things. I find it very interesting in terms of, as far as I could see, slavery is built on cruelty. I would say that. So the Industrial Revolution was built on cruelty to children. And I say there is a large amount of cruelty. What astounds me is that no one can come in to a conflict and say, here's these, I've got to work out the answers to these problems, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to solve it with dynamite. And that's essentially what they do in warfare. You don't know how it gets there. People get walked into warfare, but they solve it with dynamite. And as far as I could see, this gathering of people, where they were going to solve the problem by working out what is right, by having the maximum number of people say the same thing at the same time, with no one saying I'm contradicting them or going against it. Can I say it's absolutely sweltering heat here? It's high noon as I'm coming home, so it's a fair, probably a fraction of 40 minutes walking there, 3 hours gym, 40 minutes walking back. So look, this is not much of a podcast, but it's trying to get it across. I think there has to be a time in which I noticed that there was an atheist who they commented, "You're not so rabid, an atheist." And the person said, "Well, I've made my point. I said there's no God. This, you can only say it so many times, and then we have to move on." And it's, essentially, we have to sort of avoid the God question, but acknowledge it as a solution that may work for them or may work for anyone, may be the right one at the end. But in the meantime, can we wrap up some of the toxic stuff? Not so much. Well, for me, I think the cruelty is associated with stupid people. I think eventually, I really do think so. I really haven't encountered a highly intelligent, cruel person. There could possibly be, but I haven't encountered it, mainly because no one bothers with me anyway. But there's that. But there's also being able to be open to more deep, intense philosophical problems. So here I come to my house, and it's absolutely freaking hot.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.